From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. When a grand jury revealed 4 months ago that 1,000 children had been abused over decades by priests in 6 Pennsylvania dioceses, it hit like a thunderclap, reviving the pain of some victims and fostering doubt in many Catholics. We talked to Diane Barr, Chancellor of the Archdiocese of Baltimore, about what caused the crisis and how her diocese is responding.
Protecting children is the goal here. We constantly want to do that better.
And we hear from David Lorenz of the Survivors Network of those abused by priests.
The real crisis is not that a priest abuses a child. It's the fact that they're covered up.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. It's been 4 months since a Pennsylvania grand jury unveiled its shocking report that more than 1,000 children had been abused by Catholic priests in 6 Pennsylvania dioceses over 6 decades. Its impact was immediate and far-reaching. It revived the pain of many victims, fanned doubts among many Catholics, and triggered more investigations all over the U.S. Pennsylvania's Attorney General told USA Today last week that 45 states have talked to his office about their investigations. Later in the show, we'll hear from the Maryland director of SNAP, the Survivors Network of those abused by priests. First, we'll meet one of the leaders of the Archdiocese of Baltimore, the country's oldest diocese, which has been deeply involved in the response. Diane Barr, a lawyer and canon lawyer, has been chancellor of the Archdiocese for 10 years. Before that, she held leadership positions in the dioceses of Atlanta and Boise, Idaho. Chancellor Barr, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
In simplest terms, what is a canon lawyer and what does a chancellor do?
A canon lawyer is someone who's trained to apply the special internal laws of the Catholic Church that are called canon law. And canon law governs things like who can be a bishop, what is a parish. And in the kinds of cases that you're talking about, that we're all talking about from the Pennsylvania report, how you punish priests or remove them from ministry on a permanent basis if they've abused young people or children. So, and chancellors, in regard to chancellors, our job descriptions are as different as the individual bishops. But all of us are required under church law to be notaries. And I can tell you a little bit about my job, which is to be very involved in the protection of youth and children in accordance with the USCCB guidelines from 2002, the Conference of Catholic Bishops.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'm on the oversight team, and I have been since I arrived here. I have interviewed victims and survivors. I have been involved with the Independent Review Board as well. I meet with them when they meet quarterly in our own diocese.
Well, I noticed in your very impressive 8-page resume that a whole page is devoted to work you've done on, quote, issues related to sexual misconduct, close quote. So this issue has been going on a long time.
Yes, it has. And it's certainly something that our canons address as a church. It's wrong. And anyone who abuses children, sexually abuses children, should not be in ministry.
What was your first thought when you heard about the Pennsylvania report?
Well, I was surprised a little bit that some of the things that they mentioned there were happening. But when I had a chance to really look at the report, I could tell that, like most of our dioceses, the worst kinds of cases happened many years ago. And many of those men are not in ministry. I can speak for our own diocese in particular. The men who have been credibly accused of abusing children are not in ministry. And that's what you want.
How would you describe the impact of the Pennsylvania report?
I think it has been a wake-up call in many ways to dioceses like our own who are doing so much to actually help people understand what is being done. That's the thing that I was really surprised about. People that I talked to at the time the report came out thought that there were still all these cases out there today that priests were, you know, complaints were coming in and no one was doing anything about them. And that wasn't true. So it that really did surprise me that they didn't know. But it told me that we need to do a better job of letting folks know what's being done.
What is being done by the Archdiocese of Baltimore to respond to this crisis?
First of all, we have done what we always do, which is we have a team in place now to receive any kind of complaint about a layperson or a priest, a deacon, anyone who's abusing children, so that that person is heard and that that particular complaint is properly investigated. And always the first thing that we do when we receive something like that is we report those complaints to the civil authorities. That's the first thing. Our Office of Youth and Child Protection is the group that receives these complaints. And these are lay people. Traditionally, this office has been staffed by women. Presently, there are two women who, one is the director, and we just hired a social worker as the assistant director, who actually speak with survivors and work with them and investigate complaints. That's the first step. They meet with folks. They hear their story. After that's done, then we meet with, if it's a priest or a lay person who has been accused, we meet with them to hear what the story is once we get the go-ahead from the authorities, who always have the first choice to make sure that there's a proper investigation. We would never get involved with their preventing anything from happening there.
How long has that been the process in this archdiocese?
Gosh. Since the Office of Child and Youth Protection was established in 2002, and we've pretty much had that same kind of approach since I think it was 2002, 2003.
That's Diane Barr, Chancellor of the Roman Catholic Archdiocese of Baltimore, here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about the pre-sex abuse crisis and how Baltimore is responding to it. One fallout of the Pennsylvania report is that diocese after diocese has released lists of priests accused, credibly accused of abuse, and in some cases revised those lists, as victims have said they're incomplete. Has Baltimore published a list?
Oh, we published our list in 2001. We were one of the first. Cardinal Keeler was the one who decided that a list of the credibly accused priests of our own archdiocese, as well as those who are credibly accused from religious orders who've served here that we knew about at the time, should be made public.
And has it needed to be updated?
Sure. We've updated it based on somewhat on what we found out from the Pennsylvania report, for example. But we've updated it with our own investigations over the years as those have become available.
I mentioned that some dioceses have needed to revise fairly quickly the list they published because victims have come forward and said, the name of the priest who abused me is not on your list, and you knew about this case. And I think the number in Buffalo, New York, for example, has gone from 42 to 110 priests accused. Why should people, in or out of the church, why should victims think that the church is coming to grips with this crisis when there is that much resistance in some places to transparency?
I'm not sure. When you say the church as a whole, you know, my experience with the church has been that different places have come to grips with this at different times. And for our American bishops, this is obviously, as you saw at the national meeting in November, this is a very important time and one that they do very much want to come to grips with this. But at the same time, this is something that I'm sure will be something we want to continue to look at. You know, protecting children is the goal here. We constantly want to do that better. you know, many of our bishops, I can speak for the ones that I've served with, and Archbishop Laurie is my sixth bishop, our bishops, particularly here in Baltimore, very much, as they say, get it. This is, they want to be essentially on the cutting edge of protecting children. They want to, and Archbishop Laurie's talked about this, he wants to put the bishops in a position here in Baltimore where any reports about any kind of abuse by our own bishops is directly reported to members of our independent review board, that any of those kinds of complaints would go directly to those folks, independent of any of us who might work for him.
About the time the Pennsylvania Grand Jury report was made public in August, Pope Francis told a meeting of Jesuits in Ireland that behind the abuse crisis in many countries lies, quote, a church that is elitist and clericalist, an inability to be near to the people of God, close quote. What is clericalism?
Clericalism is when those who have the responsibility for overseeing the faithful see that power as something that is their own, that they're not doing it for others. Probably the easiest way to describe it is, you know, being a servant of the servants of God. If you are a servant of others instead of ambitioning for more power, like clericalism requires, then you truly, you want things to be transparent. You want to serve other people, not just yourself. It's a selfishness as far as what clericalism is.
The author James Carroll posed the question in The New Yorker 3 months ago, what in Catholic culture caused this debauchery? How would you answer him?
Gosh, I can't say. That's something that I think the experts will have to talk about. It's always been a delict for us, what we call something against the law, this kind of behavior. So I'm not sure if you're talking about the abuse crisis, Sheila.
Well, I'm trying to understand a relation between that and clericalism. I mean, I kind of get it when you talk about selfishness, that perhaps the priests involved in this were not thinking about anyone but themselves, but it's murky to me.
Well, I wonder if what they're talking about is there's been a real concern, particularly in this crisis as a result of the Pennsylvania report, about the actions of bishops, essentially protecting other clerics, meaning protecting priests and letting them minister in other places in the past. And I think if, you know, the Holy Father can certainly, that's happened, that bishops have done that sort of thing in the past. And that kind of protection of clerics versus recognizing the true harm that's done to folks when a cleric abuses them, I think that may be what we're talking about here.
I know some people, Catholics and observers from outside, think celibacy is at play somehow in this crisis, that if it was not a supposedly celibate clergy, this might not have flourished as it did.
I've read the John Jay report, and I bet you have too.
The John Jay
report that was put out, I think it was 2003.
School of Law. John Jay School of
exactly.
Law.
They came out with the report after the 2002 USCCB documents were put together. And that was one of the questions that they actually asked. Was celibacy part of the reason for this crisis? And there's just, according to that report, and that's what I have to go on, that's not the case. The other thing I do know is when I look at the statistics that abuse of children happens also very much in families and neighborhoods and other places beyond institutions. You know, you see recently the Boy Scouts of America having to deal with that issue, and other churches, even in our own city, there have been other religious communities that have had episodes of this happening. So it's a human problem.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Diane Barr, a canon lawyer who is chancellor of the Catholic Archdiocese of Baltimore. We're talking about the priest abuse crisis in the church and Baltimore's response. As I understand it, When the U.S. bishops met in Baltimore last month, they had planned to address allegations of misconduct and cover-up by some bishops with a code of conduct for bishops, a whistleblower hotline, a system of involving laity and investigating bishops accused. And then as the meeting was starting, word came from the Vatican not to vote on that, instead to wait for a meeting of bishops scheduled for the Vatican in February. I'm repeating myself, I guess, but is this not another instance, this action that makes it difficult for victims, for Catholics, for outsiders to believe the Church is seriously addressing this problem?
It was really a shock to our bishops, and I haven't talked to a bishop in our conference in the United States who was very happy with being prevented from voting on those particular proposals. They were not happy. Our bishops as a group, it's been my experience, have been very eager to deal with this crisis. They hear their people. They want to deal with it. They had proposals to deal with it. I think what Pope Francis has been saying, and even very recently, there has come out a document directing those who'll be attending the February meeting, the heads of the various bishops' conferences around the world, to meet with the survivors of child sexual abuse. They want those who will be talking about this issue to actually have an experience with the folks who've had to deal with this, who've suffered. And I think that's very important in coming to some kind of understanding as a church as to what should be done. These kinds of experiences have been different across the world, Ireland, Chile, the United States, Indian, you know, Italy, Germany, all that sort of thing, Spain. So I think there's a desire to have a universal, at least, base as to how to deal with things. I'm hoping it will not exclude what our bishops actually proposed, that what will come out of the February conference would be something that might be universal for all the dioceses, but that our own bishops could do more if they thought they wanted to do so.
You visit parishes. What impact do you think this is having right now on Catholics in the Baltimore Diocese?
I've been told, and my own experience tells me, that it is unique to the individual parish. Some parishes are very confident that things are being handled very well, and they're very knowledgeable about what's being done in our own diocese. And part of that, I'm sure, is because of our education program. We have a very robust education program that's lay-run, that is at the very parish and school level about training children and adults about these issues. Other places, not so much. I think there's a bewilderment and an anger about what's going on, and a feeling of betrayal that, well, didn't you deal with this in 2002 when this came before? And as I mentioned in the beginning, I think there's just, you know, when I start talking to people about what we are doing in those places, they're very surprised. Well, what do you mean that lay people already meet with survivors? What do you mean you already provide counseling? What do you mean that you have an independent review board and have since 93? All these kinds of things are news a lot of times to folks who are concerned about this issue. And the other thing I tell them, too, thank you, thank you, thank you for being concerned. We want you to be concerned about protecting youth and children, and we want you to be with us to do exactly that.
Thank you for talking to us about it. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Diane Barr, a lawyer and canon lawyer, is in her 11th year as chancellor of the Catholic Archdiocese of Baltimore. Quick break now on The Record. When we're back, we'll hear from a Maryland survivor of abuse by a priest. Warning, there will be frank language about molesting children. I'm Sheila Cass. This is On The Record. Stay with us.
Thank you.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. When he was a teenager, David Lorenz was abused by a priest in Kentucky. He kept it secret from almost everyone for more than 20 years. But in his 30s, after his mother asked, he started to heal. For years, he has coordinated the Maryland branch of SNAP, Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests. He joins us by phone, warning we'll speak explicitly about molesting children. Welcome, David.
Thank you for having me.
You heard my conversation with Diane Barr, the chancellor of the Catholic Archdiocese of Baltimore. What struck you?
I think the idea of what the crisis is often misinterpreted, and I think a little misinterpreted by her as well as misinterpreted by a lot of lay Catholics and even people outside the Catholic Church. Having been abused myself, I could reconcile the idea that you had one bad apple. And that's how I thought of it for a long time. Before I came forward, I understood it as one bad apple. And that was difficult because he was a trusted friend before he abused me. But the real crisis is not that a priest abuses a child or a coach or a Boy Scout leader or, a gymnastics coach for that matter. It's the fact that they're covered up. And that's where the real crisis within the church is. And until the church looks to address that, the idea that the bishops covered up and protected not just one, but many, many, many priests. The bishops have protected priests over children. And that's the crisis.
Chancellor Barr talked about meeting with victims.
Yes. The meeting, I've met with quite a number of victims who have met with the diocese, and they're... they tend to be underwhelmed with the response of the diocese. She mentioned that the victims don't feel heard, or the victims feel heard, and they feel that is an important aspect. And I've met with many victims, and one of the biggest things you got to do is sit down and let them tell their truth to you, and they feel empowered when they tell you truth. But I got to tell you, the people I've met with who've gone to the diocese don't feel heard. They feel that. There may be or may not be an investigation, and it's always a secret investigation. They tell their situation to the diocese. Chancellor Barr goes off and says, yeah, we do a full, thorough investigation, but it's a secretive investigation, at least to the victim. So they don't know what's going on. It's just they tell their story, and then there's a black box. Nobody ever talks to them. Nobody ever follows up. And the other thing is that victims don't feel heard if they are taken care of. And taken care of means that you take care of their psychological and their psychological needs. We often talk about abuse, and the word abuse is pretty sanitary. And I've, in talking about my own abuse, sometimes I stop using the word abuse and I start using the word sodomized, because that's what happened to me. And it's a difficult thing to talk about. But it is it takes that word abuse and makes it less sanitary. You can go to the Pennsylvania grand jury report, and I'll try not to be too graphic, but in one particular case, a young man was told to stand on a bed, have his arms outstretched like the crucified Christ, with something draped over him, while the priest sodomized him. Now that kind of sexual abuse is unbelievably traumatizing, and you've got to wonder how much psychological help that child will need as he grows into adulthood, and how he will ever recover from something like that. And yet we see that the Archdiocese of Baltimore offers something on the order of $10,000 to $20,000 to cover the medical expenses of victims. I can tell you $10,000 to $20,000 is not going to cover that kid. I know people who've been in inpatient hospital care for their psychological issues due to the sexual abuse, and it won't cover but a couple of days of that kind of thing. So when the diocese says they're heard, they also need to take care of them, and they're not taking care of them. If you go look at the Diocese of New York, they've now started a compensation program. They're offering victims something on the order of six figures. The diocese here in Baltimore is offering in the low five figures. And that's just not enough to cover the medical expenses. So why is the church getting off scot-free? Well, the church is getting off scot-free because they've managed to squelch changing the statute of limitations within the state of Maryland. In fact, for the last 12 years, I've been down at the State House every year arguing to increase the statute of limitations for child sexual abuse in the state of Maryland. The statute of limitations right now is 7 years, which is way too short. And the only opposition to changing the statute of limitations is the Catholic Church, the three dioceses that represent the Catholic Church in the state of Maryland, the Diocese of Baltimore, the Diocese of Washington, and the Diocese of Wilmington, Delaware, which covers the Maryland counties on the Eastern Shore. So if they really are interested in helping out the victim, they should be down at the State House arguing for extending or eliminating the statute of limitations.
David, thank you. Thank you for helping us understand it.
You're welcome.
David Lorenz is Maryland State Director of SNAP, Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.